I am 51, the 29th of April 2004 to the 28th of April 2005. Above, Time Digging Ditches by Simon Stokes. It's fair to say that this punishment is weighing heavy on me. Under normal circumstances, I would deploy a coping strategy to see me through the most mundane of tasks. Typically, my mind would be firing off thoughts worthy of deliberation and consideration, thoughts that link back to past events or that set the foundations for future plans. But not today. Today I am being punished. I'm being punished for ignoring a driving ban that was handed down to me during the throes of 2004. My punishment is the digging of ditches in the Norfolk Broads, and I do not want to be here. My year had started with such purpose. I had brought the website youwhores.com into being, where people could advertise any task they were willing to do along with a price that they deemed to be acceptable. The listings were separated into 12 categories, including art, sex, money, and love, with some of the more creative offers being grouped under black stars. While some of the advertised tasks provided genuinely inventive and radical services, others simply played to those most basic of human instincts. I sometimes wonder whether Dan's offer to learn to recognise every model of car from the sound of its indicators was ever taken up. Cost £2,000 per month, with the caveat that Dan would only study cars manufactured in the past 10 years. Or whether Johnny Wishbone was ever paid $10 to show you how to find anything on the internet. This year has also provided me with the opportunity to return to Belfast for the Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival. Having once made soup for a gaggle of people in a house in Botanic Avenue, Belfast, and then having cooked soup for folk in Nottingham 5 years later, I took a map of the British Isles and scribed a straight line to connect those two cities. This is the soup line. Anyone living on the line is welcome to invite me into their home to make vegetable soup for their family and friends. Although my intention is that this activity requires little or no explanation, I'm disappointed that my offer is promoted at the arts festival using the context of my past exploits. I'm always hoping that my current output can stand alone and exist in its own rights, unaffected by my name, my history, and the baggage that comes with it. The soup line exists as a piece and is not something that can be sold or indeed generates money. I set aside my misgivings and chop onions, celery and carrots for the vat that is boiling away in front of me. Each batch of soup should include a special ingredient that reflects the spirit of the occasion. A bottle of Buckfast is presented in honour of my Scottish roots, and that is ceremoniously poured into the mix. As I continue to cook, cameras are raised and photographs are taken. I'm disappointed that people are compelled to capture a single moment or action rather than experience the entire event that is taking place around them. It's as if they are determined to seize just one aspect of the performance, to own it for themselves. I strive to hear music that moves me and that conjures emotions not felt before, but I wouldn't go out of my way to record it, for it to be played back repeatedly. That would only serve to lessen its impact as per the law of diminishing returns. Before I can vocalise my thoughts and raise my objections, the attention of the crowd is drawn towards another part of the room, and I'm left to continue to stir the soup, mulling over why it is I'm actually doing this. I guess when most people have the germ of an idea, there's an internal voice somewhere that offers up some rationale or common sense or reason as a counterbalance. It would seem that part of me is missing. I've been aware of the voices in my head since childhood, and over the years they have formed into an internal choir of massed, swirling chords, sometimes angry and dissonant, often soaring and ethereal. Whilst driving my Land Rover, I discovered that the choir could manifest from the droning, guttural noises of the diesel engine, accompanied by the wind whistling past the wing mirror. I had long made a pact with myself not to capture nor recreate these sounds until I had reached 60 years of age. By then, my involvement with popular music would be long forgotten, allowing me these indulgences into what I judge to be music. Either that, or I would simply be bored of the concept. Despite this pact, numerous pressures came to bear, so it was in September 2004 that I allowed curiosity to get the better of me, and I attempted to replicate my internal choir in a recording studio in Leicester with a group of 17 men, each with a varying aptitude for singing. After the session, I set out from Leicester in a state of euphoria. The music created by the 17 had far surpassed my expectations. The recording deserved to be broadcast far and wide, heard by as large an audience as possible. I began to consider how a CD release could be marketed, convinced that the music of The 17 would transcend boundaries and defy convention to become an international hit, bringing with it all of the trappings of a global tour and sell-out concert venues wherever we set foot. The lack of awareness of my immediate surroundings is how I came to be caught in a speed trap on the motorway that evening. The 3 additional penalty points that were added to my driving licence meant that I was disqualified from driving, which was such an inconvenient ban that I chose to ignore it. Having then been caught driving during my ban led me to spending my time digging ditches in Norfolk.
Below, The Wild Buos by Jamie Tom. I am standing on a stage, but I don't want to be here. Bathed in a fiery red light, 4 men in ragged leathers are standing at my compass points. They raise their long horns to blow a chord that sounds like it has ice in it. Drums and timbrels start to sound in cacophony from the speaker stands around the stage, mixing with the screams, shouts, whistles and applause from the crowd, who I can hear and smell but cannot see. From the interference between drums, horns and body noises, I hear an erratic pulse emerging. It is a strange anti-music. The inversion of a song, Ah, Buos. I feel it surging through my body. A woman who looks like she has raided a Valkyrie's wardrobe grabs my hand and spins and twirls me about. Through her smile I see she has perfect teeth. Despite myself, I am losing myself. I abandon all ego into wild dance. The preternatural Buos comes to an end. I try to catch and hold pieces of it in my mind as I catch my breath, but it slips away from me. The stage is now dark, and the crowd is gone. I can see a semicircle of ghostly silhouettes dressed in robes and holding scores, but not making any sound. They're just standing there, motionless, as if they're waiting for something. I'm about to approach them and ask to see the draft they are holding when a gust of wind blows through. The sheets disintegrate into a mosaic of tiny pieces in their hands and scatter like a blizzard into the air. They glitter and shimmer as if they are shards of glass caught in sunlight, and I can't help but watch in awe as they dance and twirl in the wind. A single piece floats into my gaping mouth and onto my tongue. It tastes of nothing at all, and before I know what else to do, I have closed my eyes and eaten it. I open my eyes to find that I am kneeling. Standing in front of me is a man with kind eyes and a gentle smile set amidst distinguished features. Although stooped, his flowing white robes give him a regal bearing. The last of the pieces of the score are billowing away from him and burning up, releasing an acrid red smoke which reminds me of the smell of the crowd. I now know who he must be, but I don't know if he is the old dead one or the new freshly anointed one. Come with me. He reaches out his hand towards me. There is something you must witness. I don't take his hand, but I do stand up and follow. We are in an old European town with winding cobbled streets. There are so many twists and turns that I become sure he has no actual destination planned. I can smell the salt of the sea nearby and hear a distant and angry rumble of waves that fills me with foreboding. I quicken my pace to escape higher and deeper. Rounding a corner, it is suddenly as if the close-knit buildings have taken a step back to leave an open plaza around a medieval cathedral, which is almost entirely adorned with carvings of angels and demons clambering over each other to either ascend the tall spire back towards the heavens or dash away from the bright noonday sun above it. In one dark corner, under a buttress, I can see a cherub and an imp locked in an embrace, ignoring the tumult around them. My guide leads me inside, and I can feel the history of the place seeping into my bones. There is a smell of incense and candle wax. Coloured shafts of light from the stained glass don't fill the awesome space so much as emphasize how hard it would be to fill. I have a creeping sensation across my back and my stomach churns, though not with hunger. I realize that this might be what holiness feels like. The pontiff turns to face me. John Paul II, Benedict XVI, he intones and nods gently. I look at his beneficial smile but fail to understand anything fundamentally meaningful from his pronouncement. 2 and 16, he emphasizes, then gestures down the nave. I nod slowly and gravely back at him, because this seems like an appropriate thing to do when a pope is trying to impart wisdom, whether it is wanted, needed, understood or not. I walk down the nave between empty wooden pews. My footsteps echo around the building and back at me, mixing with each new footfall. I can also hear a distant rising roar, which might be a crowd or might be the sea. I alter my step to try and recapture some part of the wild buos. The sound builds as I approach a huge ironwork with gates separating the nave from the chancel, the people from the priests, the unwashed from the holy. I wonder angrily why it has any right to be there, physically enforcing a divide that otherwise would exist only in imagination. An imagined divide can be easily dismissed, like any other imagined thing. How many imagined things have I successfully dismissed? Probably at least one, but I don't remember what it was. Through the gates I can see the ghostly robed silhouettes, now sitting silent and expectant in the choir stalls. I count them as I climb the steps and pass through. There are 17 of them, plus one of me makes 18. My reverberating steps and the distant rush of water is suddenly joined by a dissonant, icy chorus of horns blasting from somewhere I can't see, filling the cathedral. The 17 raise their hands and cover their ears, clasping their hoods close around their heads. I scream out, "Stop!" My shout rebounds back to me as all else gradually decays away into a susurrus near the edges of silence. The choir stands